Support comes from Empower Missouri's Food Security Coalition, working to ensure access to adequate nutrition for all Missourians, from public school meals to food programs for seniors. More at empowermissouri.org/foodsecurity.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
One of the biggest issues in St. Charles right now is the quality of that city's water. It's been a major focal point of the mayoral race, and it's gotten the attention of state lawmakers like Representative Phil Cristofanelli. The St. Charles County Republican joins us on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about why Jefferson City needs to get involved in this issue and a host of hot-button topics that are percolating around the legislature. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me in Jefferson City, she covers politics and state government for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us for, I believe, the third time, he is a representative who represents part of St. Charles County in the Missouri House. Our guest today is
Phil Cristofanelli from the 104th District.
And before we pepper you with questions, can you just remind our listeners what your district encompasses?
Sure. It is just changed. So we know we had redistricting in the last year. And what I have now is mostly St. Peter's. So if you know St. Charles County, it runs from Mugi Road to about Mid Rivers. It tops off around 70. And on the south side, I have 364.
And let's start off talking about St. Charles, particularly the city of St. Charles. You have talked a lot recently about water contamination that has become a major issue in that community. Can you tell our listeners what the issue is and why you feel like state government needs to pay attention to it?
Sure. There are two chemicals that have been detected in certain wells from which St. Charles derives its water source in the Elm Point well field. And as a result of those heightened levels of contaminants, we have had to close a number of our well fields in order to ensure that all of the water that's provided to our residents is within the Safe Drinking Act's thresholds for safe water. And that has put a great burden on the city water supply. We've had to purchase, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of gallons of water from St. Louis County in order to supplement our water supply as a result of these closed wells. This isn't a new problem, Jason. Many years ago, I think it was in the 70s, there were a number of corporations in and around St. Charles that, as a result of some poor practices, were responsible for allowing these chemicals to reach the groundwater. And they have tried over time to contain those plumes of the chemical spread, and in some cases they've done a really great job of cleaning that up. But recently, and we test the water very vigorously in St. Charles, we have seen upticks, which suggests that some of these chemicals are still around and finding their way into certain areas and are in need of remediation. And so it's not just the city of St. Charles that's involved in this process. Obviously, the EPA is heavily involved. There's a Superfund site near this area. There's also the Missouri Department of Natural Resources that's involved. So some of the corporations that could potentially be at issue are very closely monitoring the situation, and the city, who runs the city water supply, is also heavily involved and engaged in vigorous testing and analysis to determine, one, that every day we have safe water to drink in our city, and two, we want to find the source of these chemicals and create a plan for eliminating them and providing a long-term solution to our water needs in one of our star cities here in Missouri.
So where exactly is the state's legislative's role here, since this seems like either a municipal issue or a federal environmental issue?
Sure. Ultimately, every municipality in the state of Missouri is a creature of state statute. And I believe that the provision of safe drinking water is a fundamental role of government. You know, Jason, I'm a limited government guy, but there's a handful of things that I think we have a responsibility to the citizenry to ensure are provided. And, you know, that's, you know, public safety, that's basic infrastructure, that's a free and adequate education. And I think, you know, access to safe drinking water falls squarely within the role of government. And in a situation where we have a municipality that is struggling as a result of things that have happened in that community that were not their fault, I believe that the state should step up and provide assistance to ensure that everyone has access to safe drinking water. And for that reason, Jason, I did file legislation that would require the Department of Natural Resources to forward to the Attorney General's office any evidence of entities that may have engaged in contamination so that the AG could file a civil suit to recover any damages that are associated with remediating that problem. Further, we are in an age of surplus, as you know, Jason, and I think that we're better to spend public resources than ensuring we have access to safe drinking water. And so I am working with the Budget Committee to try to secure appropriations to help remediate some of the challenges that our city has experienced as a result of these circumstances.
Since Ameren is regulated by the Public Service Commission, would they need to be involved in this process?
They are very involved. I've met with Ameren a number of times on this issue. Ameren has a plan in place for addressing any chemicals that may be associated with actions of their entity sometime in the past. They said that they will take responsibility if it's demonstrated that the chemicals originated from their substations there, but you know that we still have a process that we have to go through because they weren't the only corporation that was engaged in these practices back in the 70s. I think there's one, I believe the name was Fidlar, that was doing a lot of the cleanup for Manhattan Project work, and a number of these chemicals could also potentially be traced to there. And so that's why the city is doing its own independent analysis of the origin of some of these chemicals, and the EPA is also doing an analysis to try to figure out where these chemicals came from, who's responsible, and how we can make sure they all get cleaned up.
So you mentioned the legislature putting in some dollars. So if Ameren doesn't pay to reverse the contamination water, the state would, you know, the legislature would be in a position to kick in that money.
So, you know, my vision is we have very dated water systems in the city of St. Charles. They're many, many, many decades old. They're in need of modification and repair. I think that through updating and modernizing our water supply system, we can be better equipped to deal with the stress of these circumstances. There's also talk of moving the wells, and so it's potential that we could get some state investment in helping the relocation of some of those wells. I think that ultimately taxpayers shouldn't be responsible for someone else's wrongdoing. You know, if somebody screwed up, then you know they got to take responsibility for that. But there are places where we can make public investments so that we are better equipped to handle challenges that arise in the provision of safe drinking water.
Does this provide some pause about cities controlling their own water departments? There's a lot of municipalities out there like mine in Richmond Heights, which a private company is in charge of the water. Does this kind of provide some pause about maybe cities shouldn't be in this business at all?
You know, the debate over the provision of a public resource like water is an ongoing one. And I think that there are many, many merits to be addressed in the area of privatization of the provision of water. But ultimately, that's a decision that the community of St. Charles should probably make for themselves, whether or not that, you know, the system we have now is the best way to provide access to drinking water for our constituents. And, you know, I could really see arguments on both sides.
So the last time you were on the show, you were talking about the passage of legislation known as Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. I want to make sure I get the acronym right, because I feel like I've misacronymed that many times. Is that what that's actually called?
Yes, the Missouri Empowerment Scholarship Account Program, ESAs.
Good. I got that correct. I'm terrible with acronyms. You have filed legislation to actually change that program. Can you explain what you want to do this session?
Yeah, so it really, it's not a super dramatic change. As you know, Jason, but for the edification of your listeners, we got in, I guess it's been 2 years now, passed the Missouri Empowerment Scholarship Accounts Program, the first private school choice program in the state of Missouri in over 20 years. And that would provide low-income students access to up to, I think it's $6,500 scholarship to attend the school of their choosing if they are not receiving the education that they deserve from their local school district of residence. And as a result, we now have over 1,000 kids who have received these scholarships and been provided with a school choice option that they otherwise would not have been able to enjoy. And so that is something that I'm really proud to have worked on. We want to provide a little more flexibility in the program. Right now, if you are a student with special needs or on an IEP, you get, I think it's 1.75 times your state adequacy target, which is $6,500, in the amount that the state will spend on your local education in your district. And so we want to use that 1.75 modifier to adjust the scholarship cap for students with special needs that are enrolled in the Missouri Empowerment Scholarship Account Program so that they can have a scholarship that would equal that which the state would have expended on their education if they were enrolled in a public program. And so that's what my modification of the ESA bill does. I'm hopeful that that's, you know, the next step that we can take in our efforts towards school choice.
There's been some criticism that larger religious organizations are taking advantage of the ESA program. What is your response to that?
So there are entities known as education assistance organizations that are responsible for raising the money and distributing the scholarships to students. Now, they're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of religion in accepting students or placing the students in the school of their choosing. And it's just a fact that the vast majority of private schools, especially the affordable ones in the state of Missouri and across the country, are religiously affiliated. And ultimately, you know, it's up to the parent to decide if that environment is the best fit for their kids. And so it doesn't concern me at all that that many of these organizations have a religious perspective, because the point of the ESA program is to allow parents to decide their kids' future.
And this comes as the legislature has started to talk more seriously about open enrollment. What is your thought on this, and how do you think open enrollment should work in Missouri?
Sure. I am a believer in all forms of school choice. I want there to be, you know, an array of options for parents to decide. And I want that to be both in the public and private space. And so open enrollment is an idea that would allow students to attend another public school other than the one that they happen to be assigned based on their residency. And so if you were in Francis Howell, which is, you know, my school district, and you wanted to attend Fort Zumwalt, and Fort Zumwalt had a spot for you, you would be able to transfer into Fort Zumwalt if they wanted to take you on. The money that the state would allocate to pay for your education would follow you to the district that has received you. And that, I think, can do a lot to address, equitable education, because it's just a matter of fact that even the best public school may not be the best fit for a particular child. There may be some services or some sort of, approach to education that is a better fit for your kid in the adjacent school district. And so parents should not be unduly constrained by these type of boundaries. We should provide choice. And I think the open enrollment bill does that. But, my only critique and where I will really insist upon expanding the open enrollment bill is to include our charter schools. Right now, they could not receive new students under the open enrollment bill. And in my view, charter school is a public school. And if they have an open seat and a student wants to attend a charter under our open enrollment program, they should not be unfairly excluded.
The Missouri State Teachers Association were here last week, and they oppose open enrollment, saying, yeah, sure, it's opt-in for schools to accept students, but it's not optional if students want to leave those other schools. And there was kind of a worry about maybe consolidation of schools in rural areas. Kind of, what is your response to that concern?
Well, I think we should look a little deeper into why. Why does a student want to leave that school? That should be a warning sign for the school district if you have students en masse trying to depart for a new area. Those are the type of market signals that force institutions to reform themselves and do better. And that's why we see, institutions in the private sector that will change their policies and practices in order to attract more people to their institution. And so I think it's healthy when schools have parents who are empowered to be there by choice, because it encourages them to provide a better product to those parents and those kids.
We'll be right back after this quick break with State Representative Phil Cristofanelli.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with Republican State Representative Phil Cristofanelli. He represents a portion of St. Charles County in the Missouri House. So it's 9:23 on a Wednesday. You have to get into session in about 40 minutes. So we're going to try to hit a bunch of issues relatively quickly. So one of the things that I've noticed is, like, the governor made a State of the State speech, which was very budget oriented. We're going to ask you about I-70 and some other issues. But it seems like the focus on the first couple of weeks of the legislatures have been on very controversial issues. Something that Sarah has been covering a lot has been bills that ban trans girls from playing girl sports. There's bills about banning gender-affirming care for trans people. Is there a disconnect between, like, what the governor wants and what the legislature is doing in these first few weeks of session?
Well, it's certainly fair to say that those were not issues brought up during the governor's State of the State, but I couldn't speak to what he may or may not want us to prioritize in the session. You'd have to ask the governor that. I will tell you that, certainly those bills have been filed, and it's not the first time that they've been filed. We've seen these bills many times before, and this is a new issue. There's certainly a growing number of it seems kids that are identifying in this way. And we're trying to find a way to address some of the changes that have arisen as a result of this new situation. And I don't know what the outcome will be. It's always a terribly emotional topic for many people, and a difficult one to thoughtfully legislate on, because one, it's very new and it deals with people's personal lives, and people have a very divergent views about what the right course is. But you know, our legislature is designed to tackle tough issues, and you know, just because a bill is filed, as you know, Jason, a lot of times that doesn't necessarily mean that it's fast tracked to be a law. We have in our constitution the Missouri Senate that you know, you have unlimited filibuster power, and so before anything becomes a law, there needs to be a lot of consensus in that it's the right way forward. And so I know people, when they see certain things filed, have an emotional reaction to that. And maybe that's justified, but I encourage everybody to take a deep breath, let the legislative process work. And, you know, these things will find a natural conclusion in due time.
We're going to get to the Senate in just a second on these bills. But, you know, I think it was the Missouri Independent was one of the first to report that there were more bills filed against trans girls participating in sports than there were potentially trans athletes wanting to play sports in Missouri. And that's just one of the topics. What are your thoughts on what just seems to be just a deluge of these bills that are targeting the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I mean, these things are coming up in the media. And I think that what we're seeing in the legislature is a result of the intense media focus that has been on these issues. But as you mentioned, you know, it's been revealed in committee that I think there are under five, you know, students participating under the MISHA, which is the Missouri's Athletic Accreditation Association. There's only five students that are not participating in the sport that corresponds with their biological sex. And so it doesn't seem that type of activity is super widespread. I think it's certainly fair to say that we had maybe a disproportionate amount of focus on it, because, you know, when I ran for office, it was because I believed we needed to do school choice for kids and join many other states in doing comprehensive education reform. I believed that we needed to eliminate Missouri's income tax so that we could be more like states like Texas and Tennessee. And I think that we're in a place where our urban cities are shedding population. We've lost a congressional district in the past decade. And really, my hope is that the legislature could address issues that will grow our economy and encourage people to relocate in our state. And I just hope that we take on those hard issues before we get into the social politics of the current moment.
One more on the specific topic, which is the Senate yesterday held a hearing on legislation that would even ban the discussion of sexual orientation and gender identity in schools. It's been labeled as a more restrictive version of the Don't Say Gay Bill legislation in Florida. You know, Jason and I were talking earlier, if you were to be elected governor of Missouri, you know, it's questionable whether or not they were able to say you were the first gay governor of Missouri. You know, thoughts on this?
Well, you know, like I said before, a lot of things are filed in the Missouri legislature. And when it, you know, actually comes to the number of bills that we pass, very few of them ultimately end up becoming law. And I think it's okay for us to have conversations about ideas, even if they aren't very well thought out ideas, even if they aren't ideas that are easily administered. But I believe in the legislative process. And I believe if an idea is not ready for prime time, that very often that idea will not ultimately become a law. And so, we can sit here and wring our hands over, this legislator filed this or this legislator filed that, but we need to let the process work. We'll have a dialogue on the merits of some of these proposals. As you mentioned, some of them as they're drafted are nearly impossible to administer. And so that's why we have committees. That's why we have a cooling chamber in the Missouri Senate. And I am looking forward to working through the actual merits of issues, and we will separate the silly ones from the ones that need to become a law.
Plus, you mentioned the Senate. You feel like these are going to reach kind of intractable opposition in the other chamber?
The Missouri Senate is very unique in its size. It's one of the smaller upper chambers in the country. And there's a culture that we almost never do what's called move the previous question. And that is to close debate on a topic where senators still feel the need to speak. In fact, I can only think of maybe two PQs that have been signed in my 7 years, and they were for really big issues. I think one was right to work, and one was a weird situation surrounding a special session that they didn't want to go on forever. I think it's highly unlikely that a PQ is used on some of these proposals. And I think that, you have a lot of strong feelings about these particular issues in the upper chamber. And so it is very likely that they will receive vigorous debate ultimately, unless the idea is fairly narrowly tailored, very well thought out, and something that is common practice in a number of other states across the country, I don't think it's likely that it'll become a law.
Moving on to sports betting. You have sponsored legislation in the past that would legalize sports betting. And as of this taping, you have a hearing on that legislation this early evening afternoon. Is this the same bill as last year? What are the main components? If anything, what has changed?
Yeah, it is the same bill as last year. It's just common sense at this point that Missouri needs to join the vast majority of other states that have provided a legal framework for people to participate in sports wagering. It's just the reality that right now anyone can go on their cell phone and download an app that's not legal and doesn't have any regulatory oversight and doesn't provide any revenue for the state and participate in sports wagering. If you wanted to engage in legal sports wagering, you need only cross the border in St. Louis or Kansas City and go over to one of the states that does permit the participation in illegal sports gaming framework. And so we're just being silly at this point if we haven't passed a sports wagering bill, and that's why I've filed it for I think 4 years now. My bill is very simple. It provides a framework for legal and regulated sports wagering through Missouri's gaming licensed institutions. And there's collaboration with, all the relevant stakeholders. Many of our big sports franchises are on board. All of the data companies, I think, are on board at this point. And really, the population and are overwhelmingly in favor from what I've heard of allowing this activity. So I'm hopeful that the legislature steps up to the plate and delivers on this issue whose time has come.
Well, it is early February. Do you feel like an earlier hearing day definitely helps you out, do you think?
Earlier is always better in legislative politics. As soon as you walk in the door in January, the clock is ticking it's working against you. All those politics I talked about in how the Senate works tends to slow things down. And so you are fighting against the clock you got to move as quick as possible. So I think it's great that the speaker has chosen to make this a House priority. And we're going to have a hearing on that later today that I'm very much looking forward to. I know that there are many members of the Senate that would also like to see this advance. And so I'm hopeful that this year we can get something done.
Speaking on the Senate, your bill is just sports betting. When it went over to the Senate, the idea of a video lottery terminals, VLTs, were kind of lumped in there. Is there any way to maneuver through this issue without also legalizing video lottery terminals in places like gas stations and fraternal bars?
Well, legislating is the art of the possible. I don't have a strong opinion about whether tertiary issues should be added into the sports wagering bill. My general preference is we take each bill by its merits and try not to add, you know, other issues into what should be a single subject. But after 7 years, I'm very used to things getting jammed up together. And that's just the way that it very often works. And so there certainly are people that would like to see video lottery terminals expanded in the state of Missouri. I think we can talk about that and hopefully find a middle ground that allows us to move forward on what is, I consider, a priority issue for the state of Missouri.
I can guess one group that does have an opinion on video lottery terminals. That's casinos, including a casino that's in St. Charles County. And I think that they probably would rather set the legislature on fire than legalize those. Is that going to be kind of a big problem if that gets attached to this bill?
I mean, you've certainly touched on the sensitive nature of gaming politics. There's a limited number of gaming licenses, and we have established gaming entities in the state of Missouri. As you mentioned, there's one in my backyard. That's a really big part of our economy. They're all professionals. And this is a question of, a limited resources and how we can best serve the people of our state. And, you know, the legislative process is designed to bring people to the table to negotiate. And, I'm an attorney, Jason, in my private practice. And, you know, every dispute that I've been involved in, people start out as, I will never accept this, or I will never accept that. Well, let's talk about that. And then, you know, the purpose of being here is negotiation. And both of them, both sides of this issue have goals that they want to achieve. And so I think that once everybody lays their interests on the table, they may find that there is a compromise, a solution that will allow them to move forward and not act as adversaries. And, you know, maybe it's impossible, but our job is to try to find a way to work through those conflicting interests. That's why the people sent us here, and I think that's what we're going to work on.
One of the bills that the House passed, I think last week, was a ballot item that would raise the threshold for constitutional amendments from a simple majority to 60%. This has been a major Republican priority. Why does your caucus want this before voters so badly?
Well, you know, I filed this many, many years ago. I think my first year in the legislature, I filed a bill very similar to the one that we passed last year. And my view, Jason, has always been that our Constitution is our highest law. It is a statement of our values and beliefs, and it affirms what we consider to be the fundamental rights of our populace. But unfortunately, of late, it's become more like a statute book. Our Constitution is remarkably long and filled with very detailed policy measures that really aren't designed for a constitutional setting. And as you know, Jason, if there's a problem in a bill that we pass in the legislature, I passed one last year on virtual schools. Well, this morning I had a hearing on the follow-up bill to our virtual school legislation because, you know, the way we passed it and the way it implemented, it just didn't really work. But when you pass a statute and you put it in the Constitution, you want to change it later, you're looking at a very, very expensive and long and arduous ballot proposition campaign to ultimately modify anything that was put in the Constitution previously. And so I think we need to modify our Constitution very, very carefully, and there should be wide consensus that something is a well-vetted good idea before it goes into our highest law. And I think that's the goal of this bill, which would set the threshold for a constitutional change at 60% of voter approval. And it's something that I'm pretty comfortable with.
So during debate last week, you know, kind of the main thing the Democrats repeatedly pointed out is the ballot language on it, and including the first part of that possible constitutional amendment would be that only, you know, citizens properly registered would be able to vote. And they called that, you know, ballot candy used to mislead voters instead of and to kind of distract them what's actually being done. What's your response to that?
You know, I've yet to see a ballot proposition that didn't have a ballot summary that doesn't tell the whole story, because as you know, it's impossible. The documents that we're actually putting into all of the into the Missouri Constitution are very, very long, and we can't put them all on a ballot. And so every ballot proposition that I've seen come forward tells a very abbreviated story that often corresponds with the preferences of the proponent. And so insofar as that's the case here, I would say that is a custom that is as old as time. You know, we can have debates over what that ballot language will be. But when it comes down to it, there's going to be some people that like it, some people that don't. And ultimately, the voters get to decide.
And then why lead with that? Why not range it? You know, if the Senate were to look at this and maybe change the arrangement of it, and it, that language would be 30, you'd be comfortable with that?
You know, I think if that's what the legislature decides to do, sure. You know, that's why we have these debates. Ultimately, I don't think that we're ever going to have ballot wording that everybody says that's just the perfect one. I welcome the debate on what the House is structured, and I'm sure we'll see changes along the way.
Do you think that this will suffer the same fate as the ballot initiative in Arkansas that tried to raise the threshold? I've talked about on this show many times that Arkansas is not a socialist wonderland as it was when my mom lived there and Democrats ruled there. It's a very Republican state, and this failed miserably there last year. Why is this not going to fail in August of 2024?
Well, Jason, I've stopped engaging in political prognostication because I'm so regularly wrong. But I will tell you that, it's hard to say. I thought that when we decided to modify Clean Missouri and address redistricting again, I didn't think that that was likely to pass. And in fact, you know, not a lot of resources were spent trying to pass the legislature's modification of Clean Missouri, but it ultimately did pass. I think it depends. It depends on the mood of the people. It depends on, voter turnout. It depends on the political circumstances at the time of the election. And it's just too early to say that something's destined to fail or pass. And, whatever I say, it's probably going to be wrong in my history. So
I will also concede that I didn't think that anti-Clean Missouri thing would pass either. So we're both wrong sometimes. Before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the governor's plan to expand I-70. I think that would actually start in St. Charles County, maybe not in your specific house or the Senate district that you're going to be running for, but it still would impact your county quite a bit. What do you think about that? And do you think that more money should be pulled from the surplus to expand all of I-70 and not just portions of it?
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the program, Jason, we're in a time of remarkable budgetary surplus as a result of, you know, federal spending and higher revenues than expected. And I want to say we have a surplus of over $6 billion. So that's a really good opportunity, in my view, to take on a really big project that could have a transformative effect on our state. I'm less excited about, increases in long-term spending obligations because, you know, that surplus may not always be there. But, improving our public infrastructure and transportation are often one-time big investments that we make to make Missouri more accessible, more friendly to business enterprises and help grow our economy and population. And so I think it's a fantastic idea to expand Highway 70. It is the major artery that runs through our state. We're at the heartland of the country, and we need to be open and accessible to all who want to pass through. And so I'm very excited by that possibility. I know there's a lot of details that we still have to work out, but I couldn't think of anything better to use this surplus on.
Well, Representative, thank you so much for spending your hour before you have to go into session with us. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. How could people find out more about you on social media, through your official website, unofficial website, anything, any place on this internet where you want to be found?
Sure. Yeah. On Twitter, if you like to be entertained, go to @PHLChristo. I try to keep it interesting there. I have a Facebook page. You can find me there. I'm running for Senate. There's a website coming soon, and I appreciate the opportunity to connect with your listeners.
Member of the SAS caucus, correct?
I've been informed that occasionally I can be a bit sassy in the legislature. I don't necessarily know if that's true. I try to be diplomatic and respectful, but sometimes, certain actions in the legislature deserve a little bit of sass.
On that sassy note, we'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.